All right, we need to see through some of these parables a bridge leading us from some of the understandings we have now to other deeper understandings. Matthew 13 is such a bridge. We're going to start in verse 34, and we're going to talk about the parable of the weeds. Now, I want to take a time. At the beginning of Matthew 13, we talk about the sower and the seed. There's only one part there I want to read to you. We're going to talk about the sower and seed more in detail at a different time. But there's one part in there between you here I want to read you. When he was telling them, after he told them the parable, before he explained it, it says in verse 10, the disciples, now remember this word, the disciples came to him and said, "Why do you speak to the people in parables?" He replied, "The knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more. He will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And this is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see." They see physically, but they don't see spiritually. "Seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear." See, they hear physically, but spiritually they don't hear or understand. "In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, 'You shall be ever hearing, but never understanding. You shall be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For these people's heart has become calloused.'" See, it's not spiritually that they're seeing. They're seeing physically, carnally, but they're not seeing spiritually. "These people's hearts have grown calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn, and I would heal them." Now, there's two important points we need to make from this. Three, actually. First, the first point is, the disciples, after he told the parable, out of all the crowds of people who heard the parable, it was his disciples who came back to ask him the meaning. It was his disciples that come back and ask, "Why do you speak in parables?" What does that show you about his disciples? They had a value for what he had to say. They had a value for the things of faith and spirit. They had a value for spiritual things beyond the carnal. That's why they came back. But notice those crowds didn't come back. Those crowds didn't come back and say, "Why are you speaking in parables? Will you explain to us what this is?" Because they had no interest. They didn't love the truth. They had no interest. They didn't have any questions. Their gods were their bellies. You see what I'm saying? And they could hear physically and see spiritually. See physically, but they could not hear or see spiritually. They had no value for spiritual things. Now, I want to jump over real quick and make an observation about this very thing, because remember, you are his disciples. You are his disciples, and that's the point we need to make. You are disciples, and disciples are his disciplined ones. Disciples are people who do come back and ask, "Why? What does this mean, Lord?" They're not content with just pat answers. They're not content with just hearing parables and wondering what they mean and going, whatever. It tells us concerning those of us who have the Spirit and who have to seek after God. It says, "None of the rulers of this age understood," verse 8, "for if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. However, it is written that no eye has seen," no physical eye, no carnal eye, "no ear has heard," no carnal ear, no physical ear, "or no mind has conceived," no carnal mind, "what God has prepared for those who love Him. But God has revealed it to us by His Spirit. The Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God. For who among men knows the thoughts of a man except the man's spirit within him? In the same way, no one knows the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. And we have not received the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we may understand what God has freely given us. And this is what we speak, not in words taught by human wisdom, but in words taught by the Spirit." Those very parables that Jesus spoke. physical things expressing spiritual truths. Words taught by the Spirit expressing spiritual truths and spiritual words. The man without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The spiritual man, however, makes judgments about all things, but he himself is not subject to any man's judgment. So you see the point. This is what we are talking about here. To understand these parables, to understand the true meanings of what Jesus has to say to you, you as a disciple have to have a value for spiritual things. Because believe me, no carnal eye or carnal ear has a use for these things. The carnal ear and the carnal eye and the carnal mind is focused on filling the flesh. They don't want to hear about getting into heaven. They don't want to hear about eternal meaning or eternal beauty or value. They want to hear about, what am I going to eat next? What am I going to wear next? How much money can I get? And that's why the majority didn't come back to Jesus. But his disciples did. Why? See, you have to have a value. You're chosen based upon the value you have for spiritual things. And this is basically what the sower and the seed tells us. So Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. And the wheat, when the wheat sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him and said, "Sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where then did the weeds come from?" "An enemy did this," he replied. And the servants asked him, "Do you want us to pull them up? "No," he answered, "because while you are pulling the weeds, you may root up the wheat with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell the harvesters, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned, and then gather the wheat and bring it into my barn." Well, the barn is the kingdom of heaven. The field isn't the church. I hate to break that to people. It tells us very clearly the field is the world. And right now, good people and evil people, those of Christ and those of the devil, are both growing together in this world. And this shows you why God doesn't destroy the weeds now, lest you may harm some of the wheat. Because you know what? Here's the point. None of us appear for what we are yet. Ooh. When shall you appear for who you are through faith? When shall you appear for who you are through faith? Somebody tell me. The resurrection. Exactly. When you are revealed as a child of God through the glory of the resurrection at the harvest, Jesus comes to gather his church, the harvest. Then you'll be seen for what you are. But right yet, you don't appear yet as a child of God, do you? And guess what? The weeds, remember how the Pharisees were? They would clothe themselves with pious robes, mark up their faces to make it look like they were fasting. They would do good works to be seen of men. They would announce trumpets when they gave alms. And so you might think they're good people, but they do not yet appear as they shall, do they? They're wolves in sheep's clothing. They don't appear as they should. See, they have to reach a harvest too, a harvest of wrath. Right? That's when the separation occurs. The weeds go to the wrath, and the wheat goes into God's barn. Judge nothing before its time, because this is the place where things are being formed, and they do not yet appear as they shall. That's important to understand about this world. This is why God didn't just destroy all the evil people right now. The world has to come to the appointed harvest. It has to come to that appointed harvest. And that harvest is in the last day. That harvest for the whole world, remember, we're the first fruits. the harvest for the whole world.
Right, because nobody appears what they should be yet, do they? Right. The tares could repent and be wheat. Right? The wheat could fall away and be tares. Very good. That's a, you know, it's a very good analysis. Because what you are does not yet appear. You're right now, you are saved through faith. But it's not actually done until the resurrection, right? You don't yet appear as you shall.
All right. So when Jesus explains to them the meaning of this parable, he says this. We're going to skip one parable and go to the meaning. Then he left the crowd, verse 36. And he went into the house. His disciples came to him and said, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of this field." Notice how they did the same thing they always did, his disciples. They didn't leave it alone, did they? "Tell us, what does it mean, Lord?" Why did they say that? Because they had a value for what it meant, didn't they? All the other crowd says, "Oh, I wonder what he was talking about. Oh, well, let's have some chicken." I'm serious. That's the way the crowds were. "Oh, well, he said some really amazing things there, and we don't really understand it. You know, I wonder what that means. Oh, well, let's have some chicken. Hey, pass the watermelon. You know, do you have any sweet tea?" You see what I'm saying? But his disciples, you know, they said, "Hey, you guys want to stay and have some chicken with us?" "No, we got to go talk to the Lord. Hold on, we got to get this settled first. We got to figure out what this means. We got to understand." You begin to see the attitude here. So then he left the crowd, and he went into the house, and his disciples came to him and said, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field." And he answered, "The one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man." That's Jesus. "The field is the world." It's not the church. It's the world. "And the good seed stands for the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one. And the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels." The harvest, he's very specific. Now, the end of the age is the great white throne judgment. Right? The end of the age is at the end of the seventh day. The great white throne judgment. And that's where the wicked will be tied into piles and burned. But the wheat will be gathered into his barn. We're talking about the whole world. Not just the first fruits of the church when Jesus returns. The first fruits of the harvest show what the whole harvest will be, and that happens at the end of the age. The whole harvest. Now, doesn't this understanding show you two things? That one, the judgment is at the end of the age, that the great white throne judgment, the final resurrection, the general resurrection, and two, there are going to be people who overcome in the second resurrection. Ooh. There's going to be people, a lot of people, who will overcome in the second resurrection. Can y'all see that? There's a lot of people who are going to pass judgment in the second resurrection. See, the second resurrection isn't just the judgment of the unjust. It is the general resurrection. It is the general resurrection. It is our resurrection that is odd, because we're the first fruits of that general resurrection. We, as the first fruits of the harvest, show what the whole harvest will be. And that's the point of the general resurrection. The point of the general resurrection and judgment isn't just about condemning those who go into the lake of fire. The point of the general resurrection is about who will be saved through Jesus Christ. And you've got to understand this. So the weeds are the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one. The wheat is the sons of the kingdom, and the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. As the weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The fire is the fiery lake, isn't it? When is anybody thrown into the fire? The fiery lake. That's the great white throne judgment. The weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send out his angels and they'll weed out of his kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. And they'll throw them into the fiery furnace, where they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear. Now I want to skip over now to the parable of the net, because it's the same kind of parable. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. Now the different kinds of fish represent all the different nations. You know, whether it be Jew or Gentile, whether it be Jew or Greek, whether they be Cyprian or Mesopotamian or Roman or whatever it is. Right? I hope you're not talking about the chicken. Anyway, once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake. The lake is death. You know, the sea is a picture of the deep of death. The lake is death. Remember when we looked at Adam's dominion? And through Adam's physical dominion, we see a picture of Jesus' dominion. Adam's dominion was over fish of the sea, that which was beneath the earth, over flocks and herds, flesh on the earth, that was on the earth, and birds of the air, that which is above the earth. Jesus' dominion is the truth of that dominion, spiritually. He has dominions over powers and principalities, birds of the air. He has dominion on all people who are living on the earth, all done under the sun, flocks and herds. And he has all those that are in death. He has dominion over them, the fish of the sea. Remember, as we were told that it's only an evil generation seeks a sign, the only sign they'll get is the sign of Jonah, where Jonah was cast into the deep for 3 days, swallowed up by a big fish, and then spit up on dry land after those 3 days. This pictures Jesus' resurrection, where he went down into the deep of death, and he come up alive on the other side after 3 days. That's the sign. All right, the deep of death, get it? This is why the Israelites were baptized in the Red Sea. They walked across death as it were dry land. This is why the sea gives up its dead when death and hell give up their dead. The sea is a picture of death. And remember in the new heaven and the new earth in Revelation 21, there'll be no more sea. And it also says there'll be no more death. Jesus has dominion over death. And so we see this net, the gospel, being spread out to draw men up from death. And this is why you're fishers of men. To bring people up from death. Because all men stand guilty and worthy of death by the law. All men stand worthy and guilty of death, don't they? By the judgment of the law. So all men are in death, and Jesus come to deliver us from death. And so the parable of the net is about drawing those up from death. So once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it into the shore, and they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets and threw the bad away. The fish in baskets. See, the good fish are put in baskets, vessels, the resurrection. They're put in new bodies. Get it? But the bad fish are thrown away, the lake of fire. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the fiery furnace, and there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Have you understood all these things? Jesus asked. Yes, they replied. And he said to him, therefore, every teacher of the law who has been instructed about the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old. Anyway. So you begin to see how these parables... Now, it shows us something. The general resurrection isn't so much about destruction as it is about salvation. But you see, we of the church have precious promises as the first fruits of this hope of the resurrection. And if we take a part in the first resurrection, then we don't stand before the great white throne judgment. We stand only before the bema seat of judgment to be judged for the things done in our bodies. Determined only the type of reward. All those others have to stand in judgment to determine whether they will be in a reward or whether or not they'll be cut off. That's the only difference between the first resurrection and the general resurrection. We've got to quit looking at it in this carnal way of,
Well, the good resurrection is when Jesus comes, and the bad resurrection is at the end of the thousand-year reign, the Great White Throne Judgment. That's not the way to look at it. It's true. It is a bad resurrection for a lot of people. But you see, it is the general resurrection. It is more carefully characterized as a good resurrection, because the majority of those who go through that judgment have this opportunity. It's only those whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life that are cast outside into the lake of fire. But the good fish are put in baskets, in other words, a resurrection. And the type of basket they're put into is a determination of the reward. Anyway, does this become clearer as you see the evil gathered in bundles and thrown into the fire? You burn old wood, right? Weeds you burn, but the wheat is gathered into God's barn, all at the end of the age. And the angels are the harvesters, in the same way that the angels gather us from the four ends of the earth to meet Jesus in the air. You know, in the first resurrection. We've got to see, really, as there is only one resurrection. And here's the point that needs to be made. There's really only one resurrection. And it happens in the day of the Lord. But just the first fruits of that resurrection are done at the beginning when Jesus comes. And then at the end of that day, the rest of the resurrection is accomplished. There's really only one resurrection. Can you see that? There's only one resurrection. It all happens in the day of the Lord. But there's a difference in how that resurrection is done. It is done in two parts. The first fruits and then the whole. Now the reason I bring this up is because you are one living soul. First your spirit is redeemed and then your body. I want you to see this. Right now through faith your spirit is in heaven with Christ, right? But your body's still down here under condemnation. Isn't it that the way it'll be in the millennium? We will be in the heavenly realms ruling with Christ, but the majority of the people will still be in flesh under condemnation. Can you see that? That's the way it is with you right now. Your spirit is with Christ in the heavenly realms through faith, but your body is under condemnation and it must die. It must go through a judgment. Right? And your spirit has already been freed through faith to be with Christ. Can y'all see it? But there's only one salvation. The salvation isn't your spirit redeemed, reconciled. The fullness of your salvation is the redemption of your body. And so all of creation will not, the true redemption of creation will not be just when we are caught up to meet Jesus in the air, but at the end of the age when the whole lump is dealt with, the whole body. We're like the spirit and they're like the body, kind of. Can you see that? It is one salvation in two parts. You have one salvation in two parts. Right? Body and spirit. First your spirit and then your body. In the day of the Lord, there is one salvation in two parts. The first fruits of the spirit, you know, those of us in Christ, and at the end of it, the whole body. Amen? And there's more. Man, there's so much more we could talk about here. But this is a good place to stop for now.